Today on Family Talk.
Well, hello, everyone. This is James Dobson, and you're listening to Family Talk. Before we get into today's topic, I want to take a moment to thank those of you who are helping support this ministry. Your contributions make it possible for us to continue this work. And as you may know, Family Talk and its parent organization, James Dobson Family Institute, are listener-supported ministries dedicated to the preservation of the family and the defense of righteousness. I say that to remind you that the summer months are often difficult for all nonprofit ministries, and if you can help us at this time, we would certainly appreciate your generosity. With that, let's get into today's program. I'm sure you know that Jesus often spoke in parables, which are stories. They had great power to evoke deep and emotional meaning for listeners. Well, the testimony that you're about to hear is a parable of sorts. It is a personal story that will cut straight through to the heart. Our speaker is Pastor Greg Laurie. Shirley and I love this man and his wife, Kathy. In fact, both of them have been guests on this program, and we've known them for many years. Greg is the senior pastor at Harvest Christian Fellowship and serves as an evangelist for Harvest Crusades. These events literally reach millions of people with a gospel message. People throw around big numbers like that. I'm telling you, it's true for Greg Laurie. At the end of this program, we're going to tell you about an event that's coming up featuring Greg Laurie, and I'm sure you want to know about that. For now, Pastor Greg is going to share his moving testimony, which began with a very turbulent childhood. Here for the first part of that story is Pastor Greg Laurie's testimony on this edition of Family Talk.
I was born in the 50s, and I have to tell you, that was kind of a cool time to be alive. I spent most of my childhood in Southern California, living on the beach. And I remember that I used to also spend a lot of time watching television. It was black and white before something called color TV. And we would watch shows like Father Knows Best and Leave It to Beaver and I Love Lucy. And not having a father around, I kind of looked to those television fathers for wisdom. I would listen very carefully to what Beaver's dad would tell him when he took him into the den, you know, and gave him a little lecture, or what the dad on the Father Knows Best show would say. But there was to be trouble in paradise. My mom, Charlene McDaniel, was a Marilyn Monroe lookalike. And men beat a quick path to her, and she ended up getting married seven different times, and five of those men ended up being my stepfathers. It was the early 50s. Long Beach, California was filled with sailors, and Charlene had no problem attracting them with her platinum blonde hair and come-hither look. And one day, a particular sailor who was originally from Canada, he was supposedly good on the dance floor, had strawberry blonde hair. He and Charlene had some fun, apparently fell into bed that night, and a child was conceived. And my mom ultimately decided to name that child Gregory. This child was conceived out of wedlock. This child was me. So I was illegitimate. And I have to tell you something, when you find out you're illegitimate, that you weren't planned, that's kind of disconcerting. Because you ask yourself the question, was I even meant to be? Is my life an accident? Or does God have a plan for me despite my rather inauspicious beginnings? Well, my mom was in full party mode at this point in her life, and her beauty was at full wattage. And what I remember most about my childhood is always having to say goodbye to my mother because she was always leaving. I just couldn't understand why she didn't ever want to be around me. And I just think my mom was thinking about finding her own personal happiness and chasing her own dreams. And so I got passed around a lot. I live with an aunt here, and I live with my grandparents quite a bit. Then my mom decided that I should spend some time with her, and I'd spend a little time with her. Then I'd go back to my grandmother's house again. Then she put me in military school two times in my life, and I can tell you honestly, I didn't like that one bit. And I would spend time with my mom, and when she was in party mode, it was pretty scary. because she would get very, very drunk. She would usually come home late at night. It would be 2 or 3 in the morning. There would be a little talking, a few more drinks, some loud arguing, some things crashing, fighting starting, and it would always escalate. And that pretty much was my normal childhood that I grew up with for my early years. My mom always seemed to draw the wrong kind of guys. Guys who smoked and cussed and reeked of bad cologne. Guys who had their shirt unbuttoned too low. You know what I'm talking about? There's just one button too many unbuttoned, okay? And we all know where that is, right? Guys who drove fancy sports cars and talked big. She always drew these guys to herself, and I remember not really liking any of them. Guys that would tell me to disappear so they could spend some time with my mom. And I have to tell you, I saw things a child should never see. And I won't tell you what those things were, but there were things no child should be exposed to. But I learned how to be independent. I learned how to take care of myself. I had to grow up fast because not only did I have to care for myself, I had to care for my mom. That's my job. Well, one day, she meets this guy that's different than all of the others. He doesn't smoke. He doesn't really drink. He doesn't drive a sports car. And he wears a tie and all of his buttons are fastened properly. His name was Oscar Laurie. He was the finest man I'd ever met. And he even gave me his name. That's why I'm named Oscar. My last name, Laurie. And he did what a dad should do. He taught me things and he helped me to be responsible and he gave me an allowance and I had to do my chores for my allowance. And one day he took me down to the local jail there in Summit, New Jersey, where we were living, and introduced me to all the prisoners trying to scare me off from a life of crime. I loved Oscar and I happily called him Dad without any hesitation. Well, one day I was getting out of school on a cold New Jersey afternoon, and my mom had the Cadillac loaded up with all of our luggage, and I met her after school. I said, "Where are we going?" She said, "We're going to Hawaii." Well, I'd never been to Hawaii before. My heart leapt. I was so excited. "Hawaii, that's wonderful. Where's Dad?" She said, "He's not coming." And I didn't see Oscar again. I land in Hawaii, and waiting for us at the airport is a guy I've never laid eyes on before. I'll call him Eddie. Eddie owned a bar in Waikiki Beach, and he was a big man. He was a man who did a lot of drinking and a lot of cussing, and he was kind of the guy my mom had been drawn to in the past. And you know, at first, I kind of liked it because, after all, it was Hawaii. But what was weird was when they took me to Eddie's house and I was introduced to my room, it was an exact replication of the room that I had in New Jersey. They'd even taken the time to put toys in it that were like the ones I had back there. It's like they were saying, "Here's your new facsimile home and your new facsimile dad. Forget about Oscar. This is your new dad." I couldn't call Eddie Dad. Something snapped in me at that point. I thought, I can't do this anymore. So I had a nickname. I think I called him Diddly or something like that. Is my compromise. And at nighttime, as everyone got more inebriated, it would become more frightening because Eddie had an explosive temper and he was quick to fly off the handle at the littlest thing. And my mom and him would fight many times, and sometimes they would break lamps, and one time they broke the plate glass window of the house and the police were called. This was my normal life. But one night it went even further. I was in bed asleep and I heard the fighting and the screaming and a loud thump, and I went out into the front room to find my mom laying on the floor unconscious with a pool of blood coming out of her head. Eddie was standing over her, 6 foot plus of him, holding a heavy wooden statue with blood on it. I looked at him, I looked at my mom, and he said, "You go back to bed, it's just ketchup." Well, even a little kid knew that wasn't ketchup. Terrified, I ran into my room, and then I went out of my window and ran to a neighbor's house, and I pounded on the door. And they called a paramedic, and thankfully my mom did not die. She left Eddie, and we came back to Southern California again. And my mom continued to be involved with this guy and that guy, and somewhere along the line, I started developing this ability to draw. It was sort of like my escape from the crazy world I was living in. So I would create these little cartoon characters, and they would have their little adventures. I even did a drawing of an amusement park, and I called it Laurie Land. I was going to Corona del Mar High School, And I'd become rather popular. I'd climb the little social ladder, was hanging out with all the cool football players and the cheerleaders. I was a school cartoonist. And I did rather subversive cartoons because I had a real chip on my shoulder and hated all authority figures. I was always getting in trouble in school at this point. In fact, when I was in junior high school, they wanted to expel me. And my mom met with the principal and said she would sue him if they did, so they changed their mind. And I remember one teacher saying to her entire class, "I'd like to take Greg Laurie, bury him up to his neck in sand, and have ants eat him alive." All the kids told me after class, and I thought, that's cool. Because I like my rebel image. I like being subversive. I like making trouble. And I'm going to Cronin-Amar High School, and I'm hanging out with these other kids. And you know, at this point, I'm beginning to think, you know, life's pretty good, and pretty soon we're going to parties on Palm Springs. And next thing you know, there I am with a drink in one hand, a cigarette in the other, partying with the gang. And I'm thinking, wait a second. Isn't this my mom's life? Isn't this a life I said I never wanted to live? How did I end up here? So I decided I should change my life. And drugs were becoming popular at this point. We're in the mid-60s. But I saw a film that we had to watch in class called Reefer Madness. And it showed these kids smoking marijuana, and they became raving lunatics. And I kind of believed it. So the first time I smoked pot and didn't go completely nuts, I thought they were lying to me. They're trying to keep something back from me. And pretty soon I was doing that more and more, and I was becoming less and less interested in the lifestyle I'd been living before. I was tired of kind of the cool social life there at Cronin-Amar High School. I thought, I need to go to the next level. And the Beatles were singing about being turned on. And I heard about something called LSD. It's a hallucinogenic drug. And when you take it, it's like you go to another place altogether. So I took LSD at all places, at a carnival, which is a freaky place to take LSD. Right. So now I'm into drugs. And I'm thinking, you know, I got to get out of this school. I'm tired of this life at Corona Del Mar where I know everybody. Because over at Harbor High School, which was only a few miles away, there was a full-blown drug scene going on there. And I thought, I'm going to transfer to Harbor High, and I'm going to become a different person. I'm going to get rid of all of my little button-down collar shirts and my little topsider shoes and my Vans and all that stuff. And I'm going to become a hippie. I'm going to become one mellow dude. So I started to grow my hair out, and I transferred over to Harbor High, and sure enough, nobody knew me there. I could live, there you go, in complete anonymity. And I was getting more and more into drugs. And then I was starting to see the effects of drugs. No, I didn't lose my mind like they said I would in Reefer Madness, but another thing started happening as I smoked pot pretty much every day. I just became a completely apathetic person. And we would trip off and go, "Oh man, this is so cool. We're so cool." And all the people I hung out with did the same thing that I was doing. And we thought, hey, this is a good, pretty good life. But it was getting ugly real fast. I remember one night we were down in Laguna Beach. We were going down to buy a trunk load of marijuana. Not to sell. I was never a dealer. I was just a user. We were going to smoke it all ourselves. And I was in the back seat, and one of my loaded friends, that 60s vernacular for under the influence, was driving, and the car started to careen out of control because it was a rainy night, and we were near one of the cliffs there in Laguna, and I thought, we're going to go right over the side, and I'm going to die, and the newspaper headline tomorrow is going to be drug dealers die in solo spin out. And there'll be Warden June Cleaver having their morning coffee and chomping on their toes saying, "Serves them right, the deviants." See, I didn't want to die this way. I said, "God, if you're real, make yourself real to me." And God caused that car to get straightened out. We didn't get into a wreck. We didn't go off any cliff. And I said, "Thanks, God. See you next crisis." See, I always believed there was a Jesus. I'd seen all of his movies. He had an interesting story. But I always thought someone should rewrite the end, because my feeling was, I don't like this whole part about Jesus dying. I like him doing miracles and teaching and doing wonderful things. Why do they have to kill him? Someone should rewrite that script. It's a really bad idea. Well, now I'm just going deeper now into this pit of drugs. I'm taking LSD pretty much on the weekends, and one weekend I have a bad trip. I looked in a mirror and my face was melting. I saw a skeleton. I heard a voice saying to me over and over again, "You're going to die. You're going to die." And I thought, okay, I got to get out of this drug thing. But where do I go now? I was searching. I just didn't know what I was searching for. I used to hang around down in Newport Beach, and I remember watching Jesus freaks down there hand out their religious literature, and I would give them a scowl, and they would hand little tracts out to everybody, and they'd come up to me and not want to actually make contact, just sort of toss it at me almost, and I'd take it like I didn't care and stuff it in my pocket. But deep inside I was saying, will you please talk to me? Will you break this down for me? I need someone to tell me what this all means, and I needed someone to show me the way. I was still searching. Well, I'm at Harbor High School now. I pretty much decided that the answer is not in the things I've chased after. It was like process of elimination. But what is the answer in? Well, my friends had warned me about the Jesus freaks. They said, "Greg, whatever you do, be careful. Don't go near the Jesus freaks." I said, as if I am going to become a Jesus freak. And it's like a joke. You serious? Me? No way. And I would watch them, and I thought they were collectively nuts. I'll be honest with you. I would watch them come out of class, and they'd have their little notebooks and their Bibles, and they'd throw their arms around each other. "Bro, love you, man." I think, you guys are so weird. This is all an act. You just get together in the morning, and you pretend to love one another. See, because they were living the reality of what the whole hippie culture promised. The whole hippie thing, the 60s thing, which was such a bunch of baloney, was about brotherhood and peace and love. It's just, you know, it was the same old, same old. People ripping each other off, everyone thinking about themselves. But in the Christians, I saw what I was supposed to find in the whole 60s counterculture. They really did love each other. They really did have something that was different, but I still thought they were weird, and the last thing I'd ever do was become one of them. Then I met a girl. There was something about her countenance, for lack of a better word, almost like she glowed from the inside. She wasn't like the other girls. She wasn't sleazy. She wasn't like acting like they were and saying the things they were saying. She was different. And I thought, who is that girl? I want to meet that girl. And one day, she was talking with one of my friends. I thought, this is my moment. I'm going to walk up there. I'm going to meet this girl. I'm going to ask her out. So I went walking right up, and they're in mid-conversation. I'm just kind of standing, waiting for a break, and I'm kind of looking at her and looking at him, and I look down, and she has her textbook for class, and she has her notebook, and then she has, oh no, one of those books with black leather covers and ribbons coming out of the bottom and gold pages. She's a Jesus freak. What a waste of a perfectly cute girl. That was my thought. So it was a very short conversation. I don't remember even what I said. And I walked away. But I was intrigued because for some reason I thought, if that girl's a Jesus freak, maybe it's not as bad as I thought it was. Maybe there's something to it. So one day, it's lunchtime. And out on the front lawn, as they always would do, there were the Christians singing their little songs about God. They'd have a beat-up little acoustic guitar, and their songs had about three chords. All of them had three chords, G, C, D, E minor, two, four chords, you know. And they would sing their little songs about God and close their eyes and lift up their hands. And I would watch them and say, they're just so weird. But okay, I'm going to sit down, and I'm going to just kind of check this out. I'm going to find out why I don't like this, why it's wrong, so I have to no longer be bugged by it any longer. So I sat down. Now, I'm far enough away where people won't think I've joined up with them, because that's social suicide. But I'm close enough where I can hear what's being said. I'm watching them. Then a guy stands up and opens up the Bible, and he looks like he walked out of the pages of the Bible himself. His name was Lonnie Frisbee. He has hair parted down the middle, a long beard, kind of these flowing type sleeves, and he's giving a message from the Bible, and I'm like, whoa, what is this? And for the first time, it connected. Now listen, I'd heard the gospel before. I'd heard Billy Graham present it on the old black and white television set in my grandparents' house. But for some reason, and it's really just God's timing, it made sense to me. And the one thing I remember him saying was, Jesus said, you're either for me or against me, you're with me or you're opposed to me. And I thought, well, I'm definitely not one of these Christians. Does that mean I'm against them? Then I thought, I don't want to be against Jesus. I've always believed in him. I've just never known that much about him. And this guy, Lonnie, who was speaking, said, you can accept Christ right now. Just get up and walk forward. And some kids get up and walk forward. And I thought, there's no way I'm going to do that. Next thing I know, I'm up there with the kids. And I remember I didn't feel anything really emotionally. In fact, a person on one side of me was laughing with joy. A person on another side was weeping with sorrow. And I felt nothing. I thought, it figures God said no to me. But I do remember one thing. Right after I prayed that prayer, that girl that I was interested in, she came up and threw her arms around me and said, God bless you, brother. And I said, Christianity is good. But what now? Am I going to become a Jesus freak? Now I'm going to become a Christian? Everyone laughs at Christians. So I thought, I'm just going to kind of do this thing on my own. I'll kind of be like a solo Christian, I thought. Well, that weekend we had planned to go out and use some drugs, and my friends were taking tabs of Orange Sunshine LSD, and they offered me one, and for some reason I said, I don't want that. Come on, Greg. No, I don't want it. Why not? I don't know. I don't want it. I need to be by myself, because I was thinking about what I'd done. I'd prayed this prayer, but I didn't know what it meant. See, no one came up to me and said, Greg, now that you've prayed this prayer, you need to start reading the Bible and going to church. No one said anything to me. The school bell rang, and I went back to class. That's all. So I'm out there in the woods walking around. I did take a little pipe with me, a little bag of marijuana. I was going to smoke it and sort of, you know, groove on nature and think about God. And I was sitting on a rock, and I was packing my little pipe up, and that same still small voice that I'd heard just hours before lunchtime on my high school spoke to me again. And it wasn't audible, but I heard, I believe, the Lord say to me, you don't need that anymore. I said, all right, God, I'll make you a deal. I'm cynical. I'm hard. I'm having a hard time believing all this, but if you're real, you're going to have to make yourself real to me, okay? So I took that pipe and I pitched it and I took that marijuana and I dumped it and turned my back on it and never looked back again.
This is Roger Marsh, and you've been listening to Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. We hope you've enjoyed this powerful message today from Pastor Greg Laurie. Now, we hate to interrupt Pastor Laurie's story, but we have reached the end of today's broadcast time, so be sure to come back again tomorrow to hear the remainder of his incredible testimony. In the meantime, be sure to visit our broadcast page at drjamesdobson.org to learn more about Pastor Greg Laurie and his Harvest Ministry. This August marks 30 years since the Harvest Crusade began. The Harvest Crusade is a live event in Southern California hosted by Pastor Greg Laurie and his church, Harvest Christian Fellowship. Since 1990, the Crusade has reached millions of people throughout the world with the message of the gospel. This free event will be held once again August 23rd through 25th at Angel Stadium in Anaheim, California. To find out more about this year's Harvest Crusade, just go to our broadcast page at drjamesdobson.org, where you can find a link for more details about this event. While you're on our website, I also encourage you to click on the tab for our blog section as well. We have tons of informative entries from Dr. Dobson, Dr. Tim Clinton, and many of our past guests. Our bloggers focus on issues such as parenting, rebuilding marriages, religious liberties, and much more. The next time you're looking for relevant and uplifting content, read a few of our blogs at drjamesdobson.org. Are you tired of being bogged down by the negative and oftentimes obscene material you find online? Well, go right now and follow Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Our profiles are full of uplifting content that will bless you and your family. You can listen to past broadcasts, read engaging articles, or just enjoy the uplifting verses we post. Find God-honoring material on social media once again by following Family Talk on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube. I'm Roger Marsh. Thanks so much for listening today. Be sure to tune in again tomorrow for the conclusion of Pastor Greg Laurie's powerful testimony right here on Family Talk.
This has been a presentation of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute.
This is Dr. Tim Clinton for Family Talk. I want to thank you for joining us for our broadcast today. You may or may not know that Family Talk is a listener-supported program, and we remain on the air by your generosity. If you can help us at all financially, we would greatly appreciate it. Thank you also for your continued prayers and support of the ministry. Dr. Dobson's been fighting for the family for over 40 years now, and he's not about to stop, believe me. Here's Roger Marsh with more information on how you can support the ministry of Family Talk.
And friend, thanks to generous listeners like you, Family Talk can reach more and more listeners with practical help and encouragement. To support Family Talk with your best gift, go online to drjamesdobson.org or call 877-732-6825.